Good afternoon, Dorit. It's the 26th of September 2010, yeah. And I'm here to talk to Dorit Sim. Dorit, could you begin by telling us when and where you were born? What was your name at birth?
I was born in Kassel in Germany in 1931, December 31. And my name was Oppenheim, Dorit Marianne Oppenheim. It's a mouthful.
Dorit, I haven't asked you about your family life before you came to the UK. You were mentioning that you found out why your parents never made it. Oh. Do you want to tell us a wee bit about that?
I mean, that's all I know, that Mummy Gallimore had told Rosalind that the reason that they never got over here was because they said that my father had bronchitis and they wouldn't let him over. And my mother wouldn't have gone on her own, you know.
And you were an only child?
I was an only child. That I had a happy childhood there. I mean, when I hear about other people, you know, and when it was Kristallnacht, I think my father worked for...
What job had he had before?
He was in the same firm for 26 years, and it was a foundry. And it said he was a Kaufmann, and that's sort of the German for businessman. I don't know what he would... I don't think he was working with his hands. Mm. I think he was in the office.
Right.
But no, after Kristallnacht, you know, it was, I had gone to school on my own that day, and it was awful. You know, they were vandalising the school, and this man had said to me, "I'd better go home." He says, "It'll be a long time till you're back at school again." And I ran to my grandparents' house, which was quite a way distance down. It was, but then when my grandmother, she must have had a phone, I think, and phoned him, and my father and mother turned up, and then my father said that, well, he said, "I think we're in for a lot of trouble." And I think that would be the day before Kristallnacht. And then he said, "We've got to go to the Waisenhaus," and that was the Jewish orphanage. But as I say, you know, I was at the Waisenhaus, but I mean, these kids had a bad time, but I was lucky.
And why were you sent to the Jewish orphanage? Cause you're
I wasn't sent. It was my father said, "We'll need to go to Jewish orphanage," and he took the children home with him. He took about four children home with him. When he found out what had happened with the school, he thought this was going to be even worse at the Jewish orphanage, you can imagine.
I see.
So he took the children home, and well, the Nazis came up. Vectile house, never mind the children. But they didn't take my mother away, but they took my father away. But he got back. But as I say, the Jewish orphanage, I don't know if they were happy or not, but I mean, they must have had a bad time.
It was brave of your parents to send you off as well as an only child. It must have taken a lot.
I know. There's a story about this man, and he didn't want his daughter to go in there. Kinder transport. He wanted to keep her. And he actually pulled a father, he pulled that child out of the train window. I think the doors were shut. I think he pulled her out the window. And that kid went through all these concentration camps. It was terrible. Carola Regent's father, and she and her sister went away in the kinder transport. And the father jumped onto the footplate at the back of the train and hung on until he saw his children safely into Holland, and then he went back to Germany.
So you were, during the war, you would still be at school, and after the war ended, what happened?
Well, what happened was, I actually left school when I was 15, for which I was very sorry. I could never pass an English exam. And at that time, you know, if you were doing your highers, you had to pass English, or else you could just forget it.
Mm.
So I didn't sit my highers. I did 2 years of O-levels, and the second time they gave me my English, but I don't think I had passed it. And then my sister was born, the youngest, Elizabeth, and I stayed at home for a wee while, helping Mummy Gallimore. I went to work, and I went to the Baker Engineers and worked there. And then, you know, my oma and opa, my granny and grandpa, they had got out. And so had my uncle Ernst and my auntie Alice. She lived in New York. And my uncle lived in Canada. and he had managed to get my Oma Nopa out. And there was this letter, this was after the war. And, you know, I think they had wanted me, or I think my aunt had wanted me to come over and see all the family again.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this letter that Uncle Ernst wrote to Auntie Alice. And in it he said, "For God's sake, don't let Dorrit come over just now. Everyone is mental over here." And that was, you know, when they heard what had happened in the camps and all. And, you know, my Opa was trying to find out what happened to her mother and father.
And you came to Scotland when?
I arrived in England on the 26th of July, 1939. And then my parents had managed to get guardians for me. And they met me at Liverpool Street Station. And, my guardian's brother came too because he spoke German. And we went in the car and we stopped, I think we must have stopped in Birmingham. And then we would get to Scotland about the 27th, I should think.
So they were Scots people?
They were Scottish, yes. Not Jewish, but they were Scottish.
And how did your parents find them?
This is another thing that my foster sister told me, Rosalind told me. I call her Auntie Rosie because it's easier. Auntie Rosie. And she said that they had been invited to a cocktail party run by a Dr. Turk. She spoke to him about taking a child from Germany. So that's... I didn't know about that, but that's what Rosalind told me.
So it was just sheer chance that they...
It was but my grandfather was a doctor, and maybe he knew of Dr. Turk. And she went there every Friday night to Dr. Turk's. I didn't know anybody else knew her. But seemingly Dr. Turk had, you know, some of the refugees on a Friday night.
And was she a Jewish lady then,
oh,
Dr.
Yes,
Turk?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
See. Where did you stay?
Well, to begin with, I stayed in a terrace, Stevenson Terrace. The district was Bull Green. Stayed there to begin with. That, you know, it was a small flat. It was an upstairs flat. And not much room. And then, just after the war had begun, my aunt suddenly turned up on their doorstep, together with all her cases, and they took her in.
And she'd also come from Germany, had she?
Yes, she'd come from Frankfurt. And, you know, they kept her until... Now, she must have gone to America about January or February, 1940, but they kept her all that time, which was wonderful of them.
They seemed to be very nice people. Were they religious?
No, not at all.
They just did it out of the goodness of their heart.
Yes, yes. I stayed with them until I was almost 21.
So had you always been very conscious then, even though you didn't mix with refugees, that of where you came from?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And I mean, it wasn't that I didn't want to mix with them. I just never met. Well, Daddy Gillimore had a friend called Harry Aron, and he had come from Poland, and he had TB. But I think he must have been Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he'd been badly beaten up as well. Mm-hmm. And he used to come and visit sometimes. But if people spoke with a funny accent, I would follow them down the street.
Really?
Yeah, I would. But
and you still remember your German, do you, Dorrit?
No, I go to German classes and I'm terrible at it. Only thing I'm really good at is my pronunciation, it's perfect. But
it must be
German
deeply in your head then, your pronunciation.
My pronunciation, mm-hmm. It's better than my Scottish pronunciation. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. You were eight, you must have
I was
been
seven
eight,
and a half.
Seven and a half, that you can't remember any of it.
I can remember bits,
just
but not very much.
So during, going back to what happened once you were here, during the wartime you must have just been at school, were you?
No, what happened was, we lived in Stevenson Terrace. And to begin with, the children didn't go to school. To begin with, the children went to people's houses and had their lessons there. The school hadn't been open. But then when the school was open, you know, I went. And I don't know, and then I think there was a bomb or two in Edinburgh, not an awful lot. But they decided that I'd be safer in the country. So the children from Edinburgh, a lot of them went to the borders. And I remember we went to Innalesen, which is not too far from Peebles. And you went down this road and knocked at people's doors to see if they would take evacuees. And I went to this door. It was people called Crozier, and they invited them to come in. And Mummy and Daddy Gullimore, they went into the front room, and there was this girl called Nan Crozier, and she was very nosy, and she told me to come on through to her bedroom. So I went through to the bedroom, and she was a wee bit of a show off, and she said, I can do Highland dancing. So I said, oh. So she brought out these shoes. She says, these are my dancing shoes. And I said, but it looked just like tightrope walkers' shoes. So we decided we would try to tightrope. And we went into the bathroom. And Nan, she tightroped across the bath. And then I said, I could do it too. So I took my shoes off and went onto the bath like this, you know, with my hands outstretched. And just as I was doing that, there was a big bang at the door. I think it must have been the father wondering what we were doing. And I put my hand up and I knocked the shelf down that was on top of the door, and it was full of stone hot water bottles. So I think that's why they didn't take me.
Oh dear.
So then the people in the next house, they took me. And I enjoyed it, at least, and it was nice. That, in fact, we were there this year just going back and having a look at it. But I don't know how long I was there. I don't think I was there for more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved my time in there, isn't it? And the people were nice as
and
well.
You would have gone to the local school there?
Yes. Uh-huh. I went there, and the teacher, I didn't want anybody to know where I'd come from. And it was a Mrs. Chisholm, or Miss Chisholm, I don't know. It was a big compass at the class. And I arrived, and she asked me, what was my name? And I said, Dorrit Oppenheim. And she said, that's a strange name. Where'd you come from? Germany. And she yelled out Germany at the top of her voice. So that was that. And then we were going back to the house after in the afternoon. And there was a hill just above it, Lee Pen, and it was just above the walk that we did. And the boys rolled stones down. They thought I was a German spy.
Dear.
One just missed a teacher, and she never asked me anything else again. But I mean, and the boys would get into trouble from the headmaster, mm-hmm. I'm sure. But I didn't want anybody to know I was a refugee.
But you probably had an accent. It would have been hard to hide it. You must have had.
All yes. I could say when I came to this country was I have a handkerchief in my pocket. And every time I learnt a new word, I would put it in. I have a teacher in my pocket, I have a dog in my pocket, I have a house in my pocket. And that's one of the ways I taught myself English.
Because, of course, in those days they didn't have learning support or anything in school to help you. You must have just had to.
There was
manage.
That. There was the Beano comic. And, you know, I was in the charity shop yesterday, and it was a Beano annual. A Beano Dandy annual. And I got it from my grandson. I'm going to read it first.
You must have learned some very interesting expressions from Dennis the Menace and things.
I know. But that's the way I taught myself English, all these different things. So when I was 17, that would be 1949, and I went out then and met them all again. I went to New York, and then I went to Canada, and my uncle was quite concerned about, you know, my career, you know, what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they had paid for my education, the Gallimores, which was, you know, it was really good of them. But as I say, that school wasn't the kind of school that you left when you were 15, but as I say, I did. But he paid for me to go to Skerries, which was a secretarial mm-hmm. college. And I went there, and then, you know, they had applications for jobs, and there was an application came in for a job in the lawyer's office in Milne and Campbell, it was called. It was in Castle Street. And I went there, and I wasn't doing law, It was, my boss was the secretary of the Scottish Lawn Tennis Association, so that's what I was doing. Mm-hmm. But that's where I met Andrew, because, you know, when I rang the bell, it was Andrew that came to the door.
And he was training to be a lawyer at the time, wasn't he?
That's right. And I was there until I went to Brazil.
And by that time, were you engaged then?
I was engaged just about 3 or 4 weeks before. I was a very naive girl, I really was. I don't think I could have stayed myself. And people didn't stay with each other at that time.
Oh, no, that would be terrible.
Your reputation would have been tarnished.
Absolutely. Mm. So, as I say, I got engaged. And then about 1 month later, I was on the road to Brazil. But what happened was, they emigrated to Brazil when I was 19. And I went with them and stayed there for a year and a half. Until Andrew graduated, and then I came home and got married.
Now Dori talks about her life in Dundee when she was first married.
I had the twins in Maryfield Hospital, but then we moved house. I mean, I had the twins and I was living. We had managed to get a couple of rooms, because it was, I used to spend all my lunch times going around the house agents trying to get, because we couldn't afford, Andrew was earning £7.50 a week, you know, he couldn't afford it to have bought a house. We got this house and it was up 2 flights of stairs, and next door was a rag and bone merchant in the Seagate, and I don't know what it was like something out of the Sunday Post. You know, Andrew had to climb up the pole and hang the rope out, and, you know, hang my washing out the window. And then from the Seagate we went to Kirkton. And I was expecting again, and Susan was born, she was 17 months after my twins.
Oh, she had your...
Gosh, that's quite a lot.
So then I don't know how long I would stay in bed. At that time, you stayed, she was born in the house, and I had to go and get my family allowance. And it was the post office, and at that time, people just left their trams outside. Mm-hmm. They never put their trams into shops. Mm-hmm. And this woman came rushing into the post office, she said, "Come out at once. Your twins are throwing your baby out the front." You know, it was a big mammoth pram. But I mean, at one time there was 4 children in the pram, you know.
So you said you've got a son as well.
10 years after. 10 years after Ruth was born. Ruthie was born, I think it was 22 months after Sue's. And I think she must have been one of the last children to be born in Prestwick, you know, because the doctors always had them going. Mm-hmm. I think nowadays perhaps it's changed, but at that time it wasn't. So Ruthie was born in 58 and David was born in 68, and they were both born in April.
We returned to discussing what happened to Dorit just after the war, when she visited New York and Toronto.
But you never considered before that going to live with your remaining relatives in Canada?
That's what I was going to say. Do you know something? I was homesick.
For Scotland?
I was homesick for Scotland. You know, my aunt was lucky, because when she got to New York, the people she had worked for in the leather industry, they were also living, they had got out and they were living in New York. And this was her boss's sister, Minna Baleen. And as I say, but Minna, you know, she used to take me out too, but you know, when Auntie Alice was working. I remember I was at New York for about a couple of weeks. And funny enough, the people that I met when I was out there, they've just had, it was 2 people, they took me out, Claude and Inga. And they've just had their 60th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. And remember, she went to the boss's house to introduce me there. And there was 2 things that really, really impressed me. And one was chocolate ice cream, and the other one was the toilet paper.
It's soft.
It was quite different from
that. Yes, ours is rather hard.
Yeah, Bronco, we had Bronco here.
Well, all these years ago, you were too young to know, but all these years ago, it was Isle Toilet Roll that they had. And Isle Toilet Roll had poems on every second or third leaf. And that's one of the reasons I learnt my English was off these poems. You know, there was about Isle, but it was like nursery rhymes with Isle Incorporated. So anyway, I stayed, and I was lucky to have even got staying in New York, because I was at the Queen Elizabeth, and that was a boat. And when I got to New York, they wouldn't let me off because I was too young. You had to be 18 before you were allowed to go yourself. So I had to stay in the boat overnight. Everybody else had left. And then the next day, my aunt had managed to get a bond for me to allow me. I thought I was on my way to Ellis Island. And she'd got this bond for me to stay. But I had to be back. I had to be back in the 2 months. I couldn't have waited any longer. So then I went to Canada, and there was my Oma and Opa that I hadn't seen all these years. Do you know, it was ridiculous. I was so homesick. I was just homesick for Scotland. And I never slept at night, and I didn't know what to do.
And were they thinking they were bringing you to keep you there? No. But you must have suspected
talked about that in 1939, and then there was these boats that were sunk. And that was the end of it. I never did get over. But I was homesick and I didn't know what to do. And my uncle Ernst took me. I don't know if you remember Robert Wilson, the singer. So they took me to a Scottish night at the theatre and Robert Wilson was singing. And I was fine after that.
So tell us a wee bit about the book that you first wrote.
It's just my journey from...
It's not just a...
It's a lovely children's book. Yeah.
I'll let you
book.
See it.
And did you write that for your children or your grandchildren?
No, I didn't. I was a member of your writers' club. Mm-hmm. And this time, they were looking for people that would write stories for children who... What is it? They weren't good at learning. There's a name for that.
Learning difficulties.
With learning difficulties. So I wrote this story, and it was long. It was... And all about, you know, I just would do little sentences. And I wasn't getting anywhere with it. And I was treasurer of the club. And they'd asked Alison Prince, who lives in Arran, to come and talk to the club. And I had her staying with me. And I told her about this. She said, could I send that to my agent? So it was Alison Prince. But, I mean, before that I had been at a conference and I had got commended, or highly commended, and that was Anne Fine. That was the one...
Oh,
that
she's
did.
A great writer.
Oh, well, that was Alison. Anne Fine did that. We got on very well with her. So, I mean, it was between her and then Alison Prince coming over, and Alison sent the story to the agent in London, and it went from there. I mean, it took a long time.
It's beautifully
and then,
illustrated.
Oh yeah, that's Gerald Fitzgerald. Super.
Did he just read the story and then choose how to illustrate it?
No, the publishers got him. But, and he lived in Arran too, funny enough. But she had a job, but I had to cut it right down. But, and it came out well as a picture.
It's very good. It's a very moving story about a child. It's called It In Your Pocket, isn't it?
But it's been quite a success. You know, it's been good.
That's lovely.
But there was the English version. And then I had to go and write the American version. Their ending is different from our ending.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. It's been translated into a number of languages, hasn't it?
It's been in, and it's published in German. I try to keep it light because I'm speaking to children. I think that's the bits that they're going to remember.
We then talked about Dorit's relationship with the Jewish community.
Talking of the synagogue,
I go once a year or so.
Do you?
I do. I go to Mendel's.
Do you?
Yeah.
Or Show in the Park.
The Show in the Park. So Judaism still is part of your life?
I mean, I was part of the Jewish community, but I'm proud of my background.
How did you end up being Church of England and your husband in Church of Scotland?
When I came over, the granny got a hold of me. That was Granny Gillymore. And within a week, I was going to the Sunday school.
Ah, right. But would that work in Scottish?
No, she was Episcopal.
Oh, I see.
But I don't think it was. I don't think it wasn't the Church of England that I went to. I think it was just the local Sunday school. But, see, I never really got mixing with Jewish people. Mm-hmm. And actually the Jewish community, when they knew I was going to get baptised, wrote to my grandfather. I didn't even know the Jewish community knew about me. But they wrote to my grandfather and said, "Do you know that Doggett's going to be?" And he wrote back and said, "Well, you know, you never were near Dorrit when she needed you." And so that was That was it.
Which is a fair comment.
It was. It was, really. But I call myself a Jewish Christian.
Fair enough. And from the time that you were with the Gallimores, did you have anything to do with the Jewish community, or was...
Do you know, it's funny. I remember once going to some party. I don't know, must have been a Jewish community in Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. But because it's funny, I took a friend, and she's never forgotten it, neither have I. But that was I don't know, would it be Sukkot or something? Maybe that's what it was. But the thing is that I think Rosa was at that party too. Well, I'm saying that, but I think she would be.
Really?
You know?
Rosa Sackman.
Yeah, I think so, because she was in Edinburgh at that time. But now and again, Mummy Gallimore would take me down to meet Dr. Tuck, because I've got a picture of Dr. Tuck's garden.
And when did you meet other refugees? Not until you were quite grown up then?
I'll tell you, the only one I knew was Rita McNeil, and her husband was, you know, was in Shroud in Ayr, and I don't know how they heard about me. No, it's funny, because Rita McNeil was at school with Billy McCullough, who was Mummy Gallimore's nephew. So I think he must have told us about her. And then we had to go to some big office in Edinburgh and see about, I think it was to do with compensation, something like that. And Rita McNeil was there along with her foster mum, you know. But that's the only one I knew. And I didn't know it was Kinder Transport. Never heard the name.
Dory, when I first said that we were coming out, you know, that we wanted to interview, I thought you said something very interesting. You said, why? Because I haven't done anything. And I said, yes, you have. And then you said casually, well, I did start off. Would you like to tell? Because Claire doesn't know about this.
It was Joe Medstein and myself. And we actually, as I say, we had our first meeting in London. And then, I don't know how we managed, but we really did manage to get quite a lot of people.
Is this what, the SAROC, which stands for what?
The Scottish Annual Reunion of Kinder. And it was great, because I think some people had got their names in the index, you know, of the brochure from the London. I think we got some people from there. And then, I think it was, I've talked to the wireless, and there is an article in the Sunday Post, and funny enough, and that was where I got a hold of, that's how Gisela found out, who lives in Kilmarnock. She had got the Sunday Post and she had that article. But I mean, it was in other papers as well.
And so they all came to you?
And they, and Joe. And of course, look at Joe. Joe had got Joe, Leo, and Danny, and Izzy. So the two sisters, they live in America. That's a wonderful, you know, the whole lot, the five of them all got over in a Kinder Transport, all different times.
And their mother, and his mother as well.
And their mother got over too. Well, that wouldn't be a Kinder Transport, but she got over as well. But people wrote to me, and when we had our meetings, you know, we brought all sorts of interesting books and that, and then started off, and it finished off being a It was an exhibition. You know, we had all the pictures. There was and the librarian helped me, and we had all these. It was about 12 boards. What happened was that I had a holiday home in Ballantrae, and this day Margaret Sanderson, who lived just two or three doors down, came to see me, and she said, "Dorrit, there's somebody been on Women's Hour, and she's looking for people like yourself." But as I say, I didn't know anything about Kinder Transport, and this is the phone number on your phone. So I phoned, and within 3 weeks I was helping to publicise the reunion in London, at which 1,000 people were there. It was fantastic. And then, you know, we managed, it was Joe Metstein, and we got all these people from Scotland together, and that's where it all started. But I hadn't known anybody before that. Leo Metstein, he was the very first Kinder Transport boy I ever met. He came up to the house.
So you were telling me, Dorrit, we were thinking about the dates. When have you reckoned that
if it's 1939, it's 50 years after. It must be 89. thing. Right. And that would be the reunion in London.
Right.
And then I think our one was the next year, and it would be 90. I mean, I'm not certain of that, but...
And did you feel that you had more in common with people who'd come from Germany, like yourself, or just generally all those who had to escape?
I just felt like they were family. You know, it did. And every now and again, you know, I'll phone Rosa, or I'll phone... You know, it's a very much a part of my life now. Mm-hmm. I feel, you know... I mean, everybody's got different stories. Mm-hmm. Every now and again, I just need to meet up with them. But, you know, it was very exciting finding all these people.
Indeed. I mean, quite a few whom you met had never sort of come out as kinder transport or as refugees.
They never knew. And, of course, the reunion in Scotland, it wasn't just kinder transport, which was good, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, it was the likes of your mum-in-law, Susan Singerman.
Yeah.
And it was lovely to meet up with everybody.
Do you think that you enjoyed it particularly because you had no connections earlier on? In some way, it's surprising after all these years that you were so pleased.
I lived
a different life entirely.
I know. But no, I never really met up with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, except Rita McNeil. But I don't think I met up with it. Not that I can think of.
And you found a lot of people at that time.
Yeah, I think there was over 40 that first reunion that we found. Then we kept meeting more, you know, kept finding more people.
I think you were finding up till very recently people.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. I know it was good.
Going back to you and your time here in Scotland, you obviously feel Scottish and not German. Well, that would be people, right, is that right?
You know, when you've got to put down what nationality you are, I say Scottish.
I'm sure you do. What would you say are the highs of your time in Scotland? Or is that too difficult to say?
I don't know. You mean having my family? I think so. I tell you, when we got married, we went to live in Dundee. We were there for about 3 years, perhaps. But I really, really liked Dundee. But I had my children. I lost my first baby. And then I had my twins, they were born in Dundee, and Susan was born in Dundee. And that would be a big high, I should say.